Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. I'm Jordan and...
I'm Jesse.
And we are going to talk with Ralph Cancer. Ralph made presentations to the Laytonville High School and the Laytonville community. Welcome, Ralph.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It's great to be here.
What did you come to Laytonville to talk about today?
Weed, mostly. Marijuana, you know. And one thing I have to laugh at now that I think about it right now is that, isn't it funny that you need somebody from Oakland to come up here to talk about, you know, weed, you know. But, you know, in some way, yeah, I think that we need a lot of perspective on weed. And I think it's because of, you know, what we were talking about before the mics went on, about all the prejudices that are out there about weed, about, you know, how bad it is and that's all people want to hear, or how good it is, and just how divided that is. The people that are really for it are passionately for weed, you know what I mean? And the people that are against it are really passionately against weed, you know? And in that process, we haven't learned anything about, we're so busy trying to convince each other of stuff that there hasn't been more of an exploration of this whole thing. Because it's been around for quite a while now. You know, we're not on Marijuana 101 here. You know, the growing has been going on a long time. And now it's really, you know, it's not all good. It's not all bad. It's not black. It's not white. It's not even the same for one person as it is for another. You know, so part of it is to really begin to open up a dialogue about it. And that's why I'm up here, really. And then, but as it turns out, so far I haven't opened up a dialogue about it. I thought that, you know, because that's the way I like to teach, you know, is to come in, say, my name's Ralph Cantor, you know, let's talk about drugs and talk about weed. Let me say a few things. And then it's questions and answers. You know, and people can ask me anything from, you know, so what do you think is the best way to smoke weed? Through a pipe, through a bong, through a vaporizer, or through a blunt, you know? And I try to answer the questions, you know, as honestly as I can and as non-judgmentally as I can. So I might say something like, well, what do you mean by best? You know, if you mean by best, you know, what gets you the highest? Then probably the blunt. You know, because it mixes nicotine with it. You know, what's the best for your lungs? Probably the vaporizer is easier that way. And so in the process, though, I want to teach about weed. And I really, because of this prejudice and this pro and con and people trying to convince each other, I think we know really little about it. And I'm coming from the Bay Area. I work a little bit at Berkeley High. And I was in with a class, and I've told this story a number of times today. I was in a class with a group of seniors, and the teacher introduced me and says, "This is Mr. Cantor. He knows more about marijuana than anybody you ever met." Okay. Boy, to piss these kids off. There's one kid in the back of the room. He says, "You got nothing to teach me about weed, man." He says, "I'll teach you about weed. I'll teach you about blunts and bongs and vaporizers and purple and wax and dabs and on." He says, "I'll teach you." I said, "It sounds like you really know a lot about marijuana, you know. Do you understand what marijuana does to your brain?" The kid says to me, "Oh, come on, your brain, it don't do nothing to your brain." You know, and what it told me was that in some ways, people are clueless. You know, how does a marijuana high work? What does marijuana do to your brain that makes you hungry, that slows you down, maybe fires off a little dopamine, gives you some giggles, makes an apple taste? What happens? Why does it do that? What does it do to the brain that does all that? And then, okay, after it's over, how's the recovery? What happens? You know. And to me, the focus has been on how strong can we make it? You know, we got 15 to 20% THC. Man, have you ever tried hash oil? You know, have you done wax? And, you know, and people are really, you know, concerned about how, you know, getting stoned. And weed and the industry and its medicinal value, all of it. But we're so biased on it that there's not enough room to just learn more. Yeah, it's time we learn more. And so that's the piece that I feel like I play in here. I want to at least begin the dialogue and begin to share some expertise on some of the things that I understand. And up to this time, up to about 6 months ago or so, I would have said my main thing is I want to create dialogue. I want to teach some things, but I want people to talk about it and kind of sort this thing through, because it ain't all good and it ain't all bad, you know. And it's tricky, and it's been around a long time. And so what I said was I really want to have people talk about it more to kind of sort things out. The thing is that I have been working with teenagers for more than 40 years. I've been a teacher in high school mostly and middle school, 45 years actually. I hate to admit it, but and there's some things about weed that we really notice that are for us that are dealing with teenagers, either as parents, counselors, teachers. It's different for kids smoking weed. And it's totally available to you guys. It's totally all. There's no shortage, and it's not expensive either. I mean, that little bud, you take it outside of here at Chicago, Texas, New York, you pay three or four times the amount that you pay for a little nickel bud here is $20. So not only is it available, there's no shortage, it's cheap. You know, and it's all right there. And for teenagers to use it is a different story. And I felt before I didn't have a message, but I do. And the concern that I have, what seems to be coming out, the more I'm learning about this, more and more, that the ages between 12 and 17, when kids are smoking weed, this is when it can have an impact on them that's totally different than the rest of their lives. Even though the brain doesn't finish forming until about 24, 25, there was this latest research that came out of New Zealand and Duke University, 40-year study. That's a long longitudinal study. The only kind of solid stuff they could come up with was between 12 and 17, those people that started using then had a real drop in IQ, and had a real ended up being more dependent, ended up having the big problems with it. And then when you look at it more, it's because there's different things going on for teenagers than the rest. I'll just go on a roll here and say the whole thing, and then we'll go back. But my thing is that during this time from 12 to 17, there's a pruning and a myelination, a hard wiring that's going on. That a teenager needs to figure out some things. They're not a kid anymore. They're letting go of the Legos. They're letting go of the dolls. They're moving to being an adult. And part of what that's a big change, and it's a big biological change in the brain. And for the person, it really what it should be is trying to figure out who the hell am I. You know, what pleases me? Where is my joys? Where is my interest? What do I want to do in the world? Because what floats my boat isn't going to necessarily float somebody else's boat. You know, who am I? Where is my juice? Where is my energy? What's important to me? Those are things that kids need to figure out, so that then they go on to college and then they can go on to a career that feels right for them. They understand how to party. They understand what kind of friends they want to hang out with. They understand what pleases them. They understand their interests. And then they go and they pursue all those areas. That, to me, is what high school is about. And biologically, it turns out in the brain, that's the time when certain things are getting hardwired in, that you work. And one of them is pleasure. And so part of what I talk to teenagers about is, how do you have pleasure? How do you party? How do you have a good time? It wasn't difficult when you were 10. But now it is. It's hard for an adult to figure out, well, how can I have a good time? I got 2 weeks vacation and $800. How can I have a good time? And you know something? It's not so easy to figure out what really pleases you and gives you satisfaction and whatever. That's important for a teenager to figure out. And it's also important for a teenager to figure out what moves them. Where is my, like you guys are here doing this radio thing. Okay, that's an interest. Here we're on the air. We're doing this thing. How interesting, you know. And that's something that that excites you. Okay, that's great. That's part of what I'm talking about. And the deal with weed is especially the weed today, here, really works. Oh, my God, it really works. It really, and the one that I'm talking about right now, and other things aside, is dopamine. It really fires off dopamine. And what dopamine is, when it fires off in the brain, is that's when somebody's interested. I used to think it was just pleasure. It's not just pleasure. It's really high interest. It's like, this is important. It's like me watching the A's game the other night. For somebody else that might not interest them, I'm interested. And that high interest in watching it is pleasure, you know. But really what dopamine is the what's important filter. What has me leaning forward? Just like when you get born and you get some mother's milk and it fires off some dopamine. That, oh man, this is something that's important to me. So that's what I would like teenagers to get in touch with, is what are those things? Your brain's there, let the thing develop and figure that stuff out. And what scares me is instead of doing that, all you got to do is fire up. Today, it's so available, it's so easy. You get together with friends, what are we going to do? Let's roll up a fat one, you know, and we'll all get high. But you need to figure out, what do you want to do? That's right. Do you sit around, I know it happens in school, but not a lot of people are doing what you guys are doing right here. You know, another way to spend your time with it is they just fire up. You know, you're bored. Smoke a little weed. You're not bored anymore. You know, you're a little bit down. You smoke a little weed. You're not down anymore for a while. You kind of, you know, stressed and things. Smoke a little weed. You can kick back, you know. There's so many things that it works for a short period of time. But to me, the biggest issue with weed isn't you're not going to overdose with it. The biggest issue is in that 12 to 17 time, and is a time. This is not sarcastic. I don't mean it that way. It's the time to get a life. It's the time to figure out what makes me feel alive. What fires off dopamine for me? And it's so easy to go to the weed and fire off that dopamine just like that they don't have to do any of that work. And that is the work that teenagers have to do. And I feel like after 17, 18, 19 and whatever, I don't care. I'm not, you know, that's a whole different issue, and it's just not my concern. My concern and what the research is about is this 12 to 17 time. And like in this community, people feel like, well, if I'm growing weed or I'm smoking weed, then I can't tell the kid, you can't smoke weed. Isn't that hypocritical, you know? But I think of like wine growers in Napa or Sonoma that have wine industries and they're making this fine wine, and they don't have a problem telling their 15-year-old kid, I don't want you to drink wine. I don't want you to drink alcohol. You're not ready. Your brain is developing. These things are happening. Not now. It's okay. You know, but not with weed. And I think part of it is this whole underground industry. I can't wait till the thing becomes more, my go-to person on all this, and they'll shut up. I'll let you know. My go-to person on all this is a guy by the name of Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who I think is giving a more balanced and informative view about weed. And boy, he's running into stone walls on it, at least in this country. You know, in some place like Israel, they're doing all sorts of work with it and its medicinal value. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think if people understood the effects, or especially teenagers, the effects it had on their brain, they would still use it or use it less or more? What do you think?
I would hope they would use it less.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you find out that one of the things it does is play with my memory, you know, in this hippocampus, you know, and the cool part about it is I play with the memory and kind of knock it out for a while. Everything kind of seems fresh and new. The apple tastes good. The ants, you know, but the issue for it also is that it hangs around for a number of days in your brain, and it affects memory. And so it takes a while for that thing to recover. So, okay. So a person, a 15-year-old hears that. He goes, okay, I got it. It does this stuff to the and so it is going to affect my memory afterwards. And well, during the time, it makes the apple taste good here. Maybe I'll give it a try. And that, well, how bad is it? Are you sure that it's really hurting brain cells? I'm not sure that it does. I hear other things around there. People say, you know, and so it starts to kind of, you know, take it, go its different paths on this thing. But and it's very hard how people make decisions. I have no idea. I really don't, you know, and I think it's everybody's choice. I mean, the bizarre thing about addiction, which I think it goes across the board with anything from marijuana to alcohol or whatever, is that if you continue to use it despite adverse consequences. Mm-hmm. Somebody's telling you, or you're telling yourself, listen, I got to stop doing this stuff, and you still keep doing it. That's to me what addiction is. But I think it's hard for people to see, when, because it doesn't kill you, you know, an overdose, what kind of impact it has. Does it influence influence you? I don't know. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think that it does have some influence. But how much? I have no idea, but I do want people to know more. That's for sure. Just the way people now know more about cigarettes. I think cigarettes should absolutely be legal. Why shouldn't a person be able to smoke a cigarette if they want to be able to smoke a cigarette, okay? But at the same time, it's really nice now, which didn't happen when I was your age, that people know about cigarettes. Oh, keep smoking them, and there's a good chance that blah, 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 blah. And does that help your decision on it? A little bit, but not enough. Yeah. There's other things that influence the decision, too. And you know what a bigger thing that influences it is? How the community sees it. Well, how does the community really see it? And the community sees it as it's all good and there's no problem with it. Then it's an open door. Over here, then that's how you perceive it. And part of what I want the community to see is that, and I know that us people who are working in high schools with kids know it, that from 12 to 17 is not an appropriate time for weed. I understand people want to experiment with it or do whatever, but that's a time when the brain needs to grow and to be. And maybe I'll say one more thing, which I did not talk about in school. And I didn't talk about, and I didn't show this one other slide that I will show tonight to adults. And I'll tell you why I didn't do it today. And that is that we used to think that brains, once you were a teenager, your brain pretty much developed. The only thing about a teenager is they didn't have any experience. You know, and so they needed to have that experience. Well, it turned out as we look at MRIs of the brain and learn about this brain stuff, we see that actually you're not totally, if you look at it as what do they call those, PET scans or whatever, what you see is for a teenager, the activity in that prefrontal cortex is in a very low place. It's not fully developed. Yet that's why you know, so there's not a lot of judgment and planning as much as there is the impetus and the whatever. You slowly come into that, you know, but by around 21 or whatever, you're pretty much up in the prefrontal cortex, but right now you're not entirely. And here's why I don't say what I want to say, which is that you teenager biologically does not have they're not biologically in a place to have the judgment that an adult has. They really are not all the way up in the prefrontal cortex. And it's necessary for the adults to be the prefrontal cortex for their kids. And here's why I say it. A lot of adults have drugs in their lives. They smoke weed, they drink alcohol, that God knows, you know, God knows what everybody does. You know, but it takes a level of sophistication to have a drug in your life. If you're an alcohol drinker, it takes some level of sophistication to know this is too much, that, you know what I mean? You got a judgment there that kids don't necessarily have. They don't have that level to be able to drink in that way, in my opinion. And the same goes for weed and stuff. I think you need to grow into it. I think having drugs and having that lure there is a very tricky thing to really work with, because the darn drug really works, you know, and it really fires off that dopamine. It really gives you some reward. Okay, now what do I do with it? Especially when it's so available and so cheap that it's way trickier for you. That's the other reason why I'm saying this 12 to 17 time. It's just too crucial.
I actually had a question about the dopamine. Isn't it true if you like smoke marijuana for like how long, and you know how you said it tricks your brain into releasing the dopamine?
Yes.
Isn't it true that your brain will stop producing so much, and then it's going to be like more dependent on the drug to release it?
Yes. So in other words, the trick thing. I'm glad that you said that. See, because the marijuana, it causes the brain to fire off, for some people, not everybody, but if it works, it fires off dopamine, okay? And that dopamine feeling, that feeling of this is important, this is exciting, this is interesting, is a really good feeling. The thing is that that kids look at the weed and say, this good, you know? When what's going on in the brain is good. This good, you know, that feeling is good. All weed is, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's just, it happens to be a chemical that can trick the brain into firing off dopamine. You know, I want, you know, to learn how to do it. But say the second, that another part, say your question again, please.
Isn't it true that if you, like, smoke marijuana for so much and it releases, it's, like, used to releasing dopamine on it, then if you
right,
it's going to start getting dependent on releasing.
Well, so here's the deal. I believe in natural highs, you know, doing things that release dopamine. But let's face it, a drug really fires off a lot of dopamine. And unless you heard me say this, unless you're Brad Pitt or, you know, Madonna, you know, we're not living in a world that fires off that level of dopamine. So our brain is kind of set up for a certain level of dopamine. Now, all of a sudden we take this drug in that fires off an enormous amount of dopamine. The brain really goes through adjustments and changes to handle all the dopamine. It can make more dopamine receptor sites, so it can handle all of it, right? And the other thing is, well, then I expect to get some. And then when I do and I start to hit it with a lot of dopamine, it begins to dull out the pleasure center. So now I need a little bit more because I've developed a tolerance to it. So the brain goes through all those changes and it can go to a place of addiction. Absolutely. It doesn't have to. I mean, it's sort of like alcohol. You know, not everybody gets addicted to alcohol. But can alcohol be addicting? Absolutely. And the same with weed. And a lot of it does depend on how well it fires off dopamine and how well it does a bunch of other things that some people really like. Like if they are easily getting bored, weed is a great cure for that. They have ADD. You know what I mean? Especially people with ADD, you know, and then they're switching the channel. They get bored easily. Well, it hits that cerebellum and slows them down. And then all of a sudden, you know, this other stuff is happening. And the dopamine's going on. So there's a lot of pieces. But the biggest piece on the addiction is the dopamine. But I want to say that what addiction means to me, though, is using despite adverse consequences. Somebody who's addicted to running or to their coffee in the morning it's when you are having adverse consequences from it and you still continue to do it. And it's a little bit trickier with adverse consequences for weed. You know, it can be something like, hey, it's interfering in our relationship here, you know, or, hey, I'm not so sure. I'm falling asleep a little bit, or I'm not remembering stuff, or I don't know what it is.
Well, it could even be getting, like, caught with it and then, like, getting on probation and then breaking probation for smoking it and stuff like that.
Yes. And can you imagine? So I'm working with kids that come out of juvenile hall, right? Spent a few months in the clink, okay? They get out. And they know they got to see their probation officer, and the probation officer will hand them a cup, and they got to pee in the cup, and they check the urine to see, you know, if they used any drugs, right? And the kid will still try to figure out, and they'd ask me, how can I fool the drug test? How can I fool the pee test? Rather than, because I ain't going to give up my weed. I'll risk going back to jail. I mean, that's, they don't say it, but they would rather risk going back to jail than give up their weed. It's a powerful drug. And I want to say that the other thing is that, you know, people were saying, well, you know, could marijuana be a gateway drug? At this point, what I'm seeing, and you probably have seen it up here, I think it can be a gateway drug into itself. And what I mean by that is, you know, it was 1-3% when hippies were smoking it, you know, and then with the Vietnam War and indica and sativa and growing female plants and then all the horticulture, you know, you bump it all the way up to like 20% THC. That's a hell of a drug. Okay. But now all of a sudden in just this last year or so, the ante's getting bumped up higher. Here's hash oil. That's all over the place now because it's coming out of the dispensaries as well. And then I don't even know what to call the other stuff, dabs or wax or, you know, and I think part of the whole industry is changing, including this, the smoking industry through this vaporizing now. So people can buy these little vaporizers.
Which gets you higher.
And the tinctures and stuff that you can put in is way stronger because they now are figuring out ways to process beyond just the hash and the hash oil, then there's dabs and wax. From what I understand, you can go all the way up to 90% THC. And you just vaporize it off of a red hot nail and you can, you know, so it's, and for young people to handle it, And really be able to, you don't have to go to another drug. And it's kind of like I see, you know, what happened with powdered cocaine all the way through to freebasing and, you know, and crack cocaine. Same thing seems to be happening with weed. And it's getting ugly. We had an incident a couple of days ago down where I live in the Bay Area, a little south around Hayward area. There's a homeless encampment and they had a tent. A couple was in a tent in the homeless encampment. People were sitting around and the friggin' tent exploded, blew up. And it was a young couple that came out and they were covered with their skin peeling off with hot oil on there. And it turned out what they were doing was they were using butane to make hash oil or to make some of these other things, you know, and the tent fills up with butane and then just blows up. You know, but it's reminding me a little bit about crystal meth now. You know, it's really, it's quite an industry. Number one, we need to sort it out for ourselves. But the other thing is we need to sort something out for kids here. It is not, it really, that is it, something that I'm carrying on. I feel pretty strongly about is between 12 and 17. It doesn't have to at all. Nothing's one way or the other, but can it have a real influence on the direction that you're going in your life as these things begin to form in, as you begin to hardwire in your pleasures and your interests? Boy, that can affect direction.
I think it does, but I also think like the amount of usage, like the person uses, is really
agreed.
Doctor,
agreed.
Does the long-term usage of smoking marijuana affect physically the amount of dopamine that your brain is allowed to send out afterwards?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is that if you're using weed for the most part to fire off your dopamine, like anything else, then the brain kind of gets lazy. And doesn't make the dopamine in that way, and kind of, well, no, I got this weed here. It's going to come in and take care of it for me. And so does it decrease how it makes dopamine? Yeah. Not only that, it's also decreasing the experience on the receptor side as well. And you're making more dopamine receptor sites, so you have more of a draw for it. See where I have more of a draw for it? I don't feel it quite as strongly, and I'm not making as much. That's the other end. There's a very interesting book about addiction that to me was the most important book. And what I just said reminded me of the name of the book. And the name of the book is called In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts. By I can't think of his first name, his last name is Matte, M-A-T-T-E. And what a hungry ghost is somebody that ends up having, it's a Buddhist kind of picture, and it's somebody who has their mouth open and their belly is extended like, you know, they're starving to death, you know, like just, but their neck is so thin that they can't take it in. So it's open and they want it, but somehow or other they can't take it in. And the thing, as I talk about this thing, is really what using a drug is taking something from the outside to make you feel better. You know, and I'm not judging it one way or the other, but we need to figure out how to get this stuff from the inside too. What is it that turns us on? What, you know, where is that juice? Otherwise, we end up like a hungry ghost, constantly trying to get it from there, and having less capacity to be able to get it, because we're making less dopamine, and you know, it's dulled. So it's. But we need to figure out, and the thing is, from 12 to 17 is when that stuff gets hardwired in. That's the time to figure out where are those sources of dopamine, where are the interest and the passion, and my definition of dopamine is it's the what's important filter. It lets you know when it fires off you that something's important to you. And that's important. And if I'm rambling here, I want to go for one more that I want to say. And that is that dopamine is not the only feel-good drug in the brain. There's other feel-good drugs in the brain. And one of those feel-good drugs in the brain is serotonin. And serotonin is a different kind of feel-good than dopamine. What serotonin is, when it fires off in the brain, you get a feeling of well-being. Now, what do I mean by a feeling of well-being? What I mean is, well, I feel good about myself. You know, I got people in my life who love me. I feel like I'm a good person. I do good things. I feel good about who I am, and I have interest. I have a life. That's serotonin. As opposed to, boy, I like that piece of pizza. I mean, you can have somebody who has a terrible life, you know, and feels awful about themselves and doesn't have many people in their life that love them or interest or whatever. But the other person, you know, can have a lot of serotonin and feeling of well-being. But they can both walk into a pizza store and both enjoy the same piece of pizza. They could still enjoy a piece of music, both of them. They can still enjoy getting their skin touched. You know, they could still both get high, you know, and fire off off dopamine. But once the touch or the weed or the pizza is over, then what's left? What's left is what's my state of being. That's serotonin. It's almost like the difference, and I think this is important. It's almost like the difference between pleasure and happiness. If you got a little money, you can buy some pleasure. You know, but that feeling of well-being, that feeling of, hey, I feel good about my life and whatever, that's a different ballgame. And I think that needs to be looked at too, is let's separate out the difference between pleasure and putting together a life for myself.
How much do you think the views of a community would affect the use of the 12 to 17 year old population? Like, if a community was strongly biased against it, would they be more inclined to not use the drug, as you would normally think? But
my answer, yes. If the community really was not happy with kids using the drug and really made that message very clearly, I think it would affect the usage.
Yeah,
amongst the kids.
If you go like back east, there's like, it's so illegal and like hardly anybody smokes because it's so bad and it's all looked down upon like terribly. So like hardly anybody does it. And then when you come out here, since it's like around so much, everybody knows so much about it. And since it's just so easy, everybody's more for it.
Right. And see, but the thing is, I'm not for it against it. But what I'm saying is that what the community thinks about teenagers and using marijuana, what they think about that matters. It matters in terms of kids' usage. It does, you know, because you can have a parent that just says, listen, not now. I don't want you to smoke. I need your brain to develop at this point. I need you to figure out this stuff. I'm scared around this weed. This weed's not simple. You know, it may be that some people just mess with it, but others don't. Who are you? Who knows? You know, do you like it or do you love it? It's a very tricky whole thing. And I think if adults could get together with school, get together with just the whole adult community.
But adults a lot of time are the ones growing it.
Good. Let them grow it. That's what I'm saying. Just like a wine grower, let the wine grower grow grapes. That's a wonderful thing, you know. At the same time, the wine grower can say to the kid, I don't want you to drink alcohol. Now, you're too young. You're 15 years old. I don't want you drinking alcohol. And it's not hypocritical, even though they got their winery. Yeah, I think that can be the same for the growers with weed, to understand weed has a different impact on the brain from 12 to 17 than it does for the rest of people's lives. This, and kids are kind of trying to figure this stuff out, and if the community would really give more of a clear message to kids. But part of the reason that they don't is because the community also doesn't, well, what is the problem with it really? You know, does it really, you know, and so the community really doesn't understand how the drug works, you know, and so that's part, and that's what I hope to do tonight too, is to teach a little bit about why does the apple taste good? That doesn't come out of the sky here, you know. Why does all of a sudden the music better? That's not coming from nowhere. Something's going on. What's going on? And what impact does that have? Is it bad? Is it good? You know. And I'm not into the bad or good, but we got to understand a little bit more here and allow ourselves to grow. But we're not going to grow if all we think is marijuana is good and everything else is a threat. And I'll tell you, I understand why people are like that, because people are reacting to the war on drugs. And they should. It was horrible. And it's still doing horrible things. But at the same time, if we're just stuck in a reaction to it, then we're stuck as well. You know, we got to move beyond the prejudices that the war on drugs has caused for us to be able to sort out this weed thing. If we really are going to incorporate it into the society, to understand it. And part of it, you know, is this high school time. I'm sorry. It's all over the place. It's totally available for you guys. And you're not getting any clarity or message about it at all. And I'm concerned because it has an impact. Really, it's a different ballgame from 12 to 17. You kind of brought it up too, though, when you said when you go somewhere else, you know, and people really, oh, it's really looked down upon. What you said to me was that people outside of this area, like you said, you were in L.A., you know, and they said, where do you live? And you said Mendocino County, right? And they might have taken up two huge stereotypes. Number one, oh, you're one of them stoners, huh? Because that's all they do up there is smoke weed. And number two, your parents are probably growers too, you know, because you're all involved in that stuff. And then they look down on you.
Exactly.
Around
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And my answer to you was in the Bay Area, no. You know, because I'm, you know, that, you know, but I think it's probably, I think, I'm sure it's true, you know, for especially for these anti-marijuana people, you know, that can really put you in a box and really prejudice you. But you know, something that I'm thinking of here is that part of what's interesting is I wonder how it affects you guys. What is that as a result of thinking that you're being looked down upon by a lot of the straight society? So then how does that affect you and make you think?
Like I said, I really just think that a lot of people are just ignorant about it. I mean, like, some people know a lot. And then, like, even up here, like, people that are growers and stuff that think they know all about it are still really ignorant about it. So I think no matter where you go, there's still going to be, like, a lot of people that don't know much about it. They'll judge you for it, good or bad, just because they're ignorant about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah. I agree. And it's the judgment, to me, that causes the ignorance, mm-hmm. you know. But there can be ignorance around it up here, too, because mm-hmm. of the judgments around it the other way.
Because they just assume it's so great and, like, such a good thing that they'll just forget anything else about it.
There's almost actually more ignorance up here, is what I would say.
I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you say that?
I would say that because almost everyone up here that's kind of a stereotype, but almost everyone up here believes that it has a lot of positive effects.
Mm-hmm.
And they when they talk about the positive effects, they don't mention any of the negative effects, and that kind of gives off.
Well, I believe it has like a lot of positive effects, but it's just a drug that's abused.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's what causes the negative ones, which they don't think about because they're too busy about thinking, if you had this, then it could help you. But
yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you define the abuse part of marijuana?
Just people smoking it, like, every day in the morning, at night, when they get home. Just people that are more dependent on it to feel happy.
Yeah, being dependent on marijuana to make you happy instead of everything else that should.
You guys described how students reacted to the thing, and it can be
I'd love to hear that too.
Yeah, a lot of the students I see, well, there's almost just a black and white reaction to it. Half of them, no, I don't know about half, but some of them either react really negatively to a presentation like that and think that they're just completely wrong and they're being ignorant, basically, and the other half completely support it. They completely agree with the message you're trying to get across. And
in terms of describing those two halves, how would you describe them?
What do you mean by that?
Well, is there something that's similar about one half and about the other?
Well, the half that disagrees would definitely be the half that uses it, I would say.
Oh, that's what I was looking for. So the half that disagreed with the half that was using it. Mm-hmm. What did they disagree with? Because I always get accused so much of being too positive about marijuana that
Well, I mean, I don't think it was everyone.
No, it wasn't.
But go ahead.
It, like I said, it's not everyone that uses it, but it's
Do you remember what they said? Maybe that was that why they didn't like it, or
No, it's not even really what they said. It's you can see it in their face. Like during the presentation, I looked around and I saw a couple people just leaning back and
snickering,
thinking it was ridiculous. And those are the ones that find it ignorant, or that are ignorant and won't.
Well, even like
look at the whole picture.
Someone that was sitting by me like doesn't use it, and they were still snickering about it.
Yeah.
It's not a simple and easy subject, and there, you know, there's, like I said, there's a lot of, you know, well, interesting.
I think it's just easier to hear when you're more informed about it.
Yeah.
So.
But you would think the users would be pretty informed about it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's more of the effects other than, like, the information about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Those are, like, two completely different things.
So the reaction was that it was really polarized of either really for, really against, rather than, well, at least it's not blah, blah, which makes me feel good. You know, oh, that was a really kind of boring, you know.
Yeah.
At least people had a passion one way or the other about it.
Yeah, I pretty much knew everything that you were saying in the presentation. There's not really one thing that I learned.
Really? Had you heard me before? So where did you learn all that stuff about?
Well, actually, I was reading something about it, like, a few weeks ago. I don't remember why, but I just, like, was reading something about it, and, like, I don't even remember what it was. But
I think I sent that to you.
No, I don't think
no,
so.
No, because I sent you something like that.
I don't think so.
Okay, never mind. But I know I did. Anyway.
Good for you. You know, part of what I saw today was the kids were interested in talking about it. You know, they're interested in what I felt a little badly about was because it was so short a period of time that it wasn't a lot of back and forth. I ended up because I wanted to, you know, kind of teach some things about it.
Well, I've heard from a lot of people, like, even before you showed up today, that, like, last year at the health fair that you were really good at talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even from people that don't really use it much or, like, every now and then, you know. And they still thought that you were really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm working, you know, to try to.
I think it helps because you say both sides about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there is both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Finally seeing the someone that feels neutral about it is a lot different from what they're used to seeing because they either see growers and smokers or
Cops.
Yeah. Yeah, we're cops, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I hope that there'll be a lot more voice like mine. That's part of what I think needs to happen in the community to really get some uncharged talk about it. But, you know, there's so much money involved and, there's so much stuff that it's hard to really sort it out. But it's important. It's important for this community to sort some of the stuff that's been around now for a while. You know, and what impact does it have on the kids? You know, when you asked me in the beginning about ethical stuff, what I thought you were going to is how does marijuana affect the ethics of the community? In other words, in terms of something like if it's so easy to get pleasure by just firing it up. I mean, it used to be when you and I grew up then that it wasn't you had to work for pleasure, you know, it was a kind of like one thing that we're here, you can just get it. You know what I mean? I wonder, you know, are people willing to work in a cafeteria for, you know, a cafe for $10 an hour, you know, when you can trim bud for 20 an hour, you know, does it? So I don't know how it affects all the ethics here either. I think the community may want to look at that, but they would know better, you know, than anybody, you know, and begin to sort this marijuana thing out without all of this fight with cops and robbers and war on drugs and growers and because it's here and it's part of the culture and it's totally, and I don't know whether people realize it or not, it's totally part of the teenage culture. Up and down the coast. It is everywhere. And with the e-cigarettes and the potency going up, and we need to really sort some stuff out. And still, there isn't much uncharged, meaningful talk about it.
And it's hard to get that kind of talk, especially when there's two completely polar sides of the argument.
It's, yeah.
And based on where you live, you're going to be more towards one than
exactly.
The other. So
how do you break through that? See, if it wasn't in our way, who cares? You know, if you have that. But this stuff is. This stuff is. Marijuana and it being part of the teenage culture is something to contend with. And it's something that teachers are trying to figure out. And really, you know, here... I don't see it as having as big an, I'll just throw it out for me. When I work in the inner cities in Oakland and San Francisco, and at the continuation schools, the usage there is way over 50%. And the continuation schools are kids that are, you know, just on the border of dropping out, you know, and weed has a real big impact on their lives, you know, and walking around stone. And this whole thing around the hippocampus that I was teaching today around memory, and I want to say it here, is marijuana does interfere with learning. It upsets that memory system for a while. It does make things seem fresh and new, but there's a recovery time on that. And for kids, it's a different ball game. You know, it's just not a time with this memory stuff. And I wish the community could kind of sort that out and then maybe sort it out as adults. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, down in the Bay Area, they have something called MA, Marijuana Anonymous. Not Alcoholics Anonymous, not Narcotics Anonymous, Marijuana Anonymous. And you can go to a meeting every day of the week. Up here, last year, 2 years ago, when I was talking, I think it was in Ukiah, you know, and there's no MA up here. Does nobody have a problem with weed? Does nobody have a problem with weed?
Well, I think a lot of people do have problems. It's just the fact that there's so much here, and they think it's okay because they don't want to get informed about the rest of it, and they feel that marijuana isn't addictive, even though they, like, use it so much and need it to feel happy.
Yeah.
That they really are addicted and they just won't admit it to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the first stage of denial.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe. But I think some people are. I think it's interfering. It's got to be interfering with some people's lives out there. What's the support for them? And if the community is just all good, it's not leaving room. You know, to really I don't know. It's not an easy thing that you guys. I'm glad, you know, that it's brought, you know, a lot of resources in. That's another thing I don't know, and it's not really any of my business. But do the growers really put stuff back into the community? You know, or is the money just going out the door? I mean, is it really a resource for the?
Yeah, I think it just depends on the person.
Yeah. But, you know, going to this polarity thing, you know, I had somebody say to me recently, oh, you must be one of those drug warriors. You know, I'm not a drug, you know, it's like we got to get beyond that mentality that people are just ready to go to war over this stuff. And it hits close to home for sure, financially and everything else. But, you know, this is a big conversation. And, in the midst of it is teenagers, and they're trying to make heads or tails out of it. And nobody's really, it's like the Wild West. We're all trying to figure it out, ourselves. And we need to have some discussion about it. But the trouble is, anytime the discussion comes in, it's somebody that has an agenda that's trying to convince you it's bad or trying to convince you it's good, and. Yeah, and that agenda is a drag, and it really keeps people, you know, from really getting into this thing. And about the friend who said I smoke, you know, weed and it didn't affect me. Yeah, that may be true for him, but I want to bring him into some of these schools that I go into and some of these continuation schools and take a look how the marijuana is holding these kids. They've gotten so dependent on it. It takes care of their anger, their depression, their ADD, their money, their interest. And it's only a short term for a few hours. and then they're back again to have, you know what I mean? It's this short term reward thing. My thing is, you still have a responsibility here for those 12 to 17-year-olds to let that develop, okay? And at least, and it's not that kids won't use it all, but at least let's start putting the message. There's a concern here, you know? And to just get off of this, you know, all I'm going to do is push it one way or the other, just because it is my lifestyle. But it's a powerful drug. And it can really kind of take over. Like I said, that dopamine is the what's important filter. And if weed is firing off that dopamine, weed's important, you know?
Yeah, there's also kind of a peer pressure effect from people that do either grow it or smoke it. They're considered to be cool, and I see a lot of people falling into that and doing the same.
That's what Dan was saying was exactly. Happening years ago. You know, it's like somehow or other you're – that's an interesting kind of peer pressure too, but it's just like people are doing it, yeah. One of the things that I wanted to say, and might as well say it here on this, is that it's a different marijuana is not an upper or a downer. It's a hallucinogenic. It's an all arounder. And so one of the kind of harm reduction things that I want to talk about, and I was surprised, and I don't know whether everybody knew it or not. Tell me that eating an edible, eating marijuana, is a different ball game from smoking it. And do people realize and really know that? No, hey, you can trip from it. It's a you can you know we're smoking it. Your brain can only absorb a certain amount. The trip lasts 6, 8, 10 hours. What does a bad trip look like? Or you know, do you think people knew the difference between edibles and smokers and smoking it?
Well, I think it really depends on like the people and their experience. Like, I mean, I know that like. Edible is a lot different than smoking weed because when you smoke, you start feeling the effects like almost instantly, and you start knowing your level of high. But when you have an edible and you make it, you're not sure of like how strong it is or right. like the potency.
Right.
And so if you have too much, it could be like way too strong for you, but you won't know until like half an hour later or an hour later, depending on how long it takes.
Do you think most people know that? And do you think most people know that they could trip? If they ate too much?
I really just think it depends on, like, the person and if they really tried to learn about it or if they've, like, mm-hmm. asked about it or if they're curious.
See, because those are some of the things that I really wanted to teach today in addition to just the dopamine stuff. There's And so I don't know, you know, how sophisticated people are. You know, I think, way, way more than
well, I think,
the
like,
average student.
The upperclassmen know more than the lowerclassmen.
Yeah.
So.
What do you think the upperclassmen are telling the lowerclassmen?
That's a good question.
I don't think they're really telling them as much as they're showing them.
Yeah, things. Okay. That's actually, that's the same thing. Yeah.
But it's actually
and,
a lot.
And what do you think they're showing them?
They're show... Well, the ones that do smoke would be, and are proud of smoking, would show them that it's acceptable. Not even as consciously, but... And the ones that don't, I really don't think would show them anything.
Got it. Well, they might show them that they don't use.
Well... Yeah, they show them, they could show them that they don't, but I really haven't seen that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really seen anybody say, I don't smoke and you shouldn't either.
Mm-hmm.
I only see the other side of that.
No, it's kind of like shoving your belief down
exactly.
the throat.
Uh-huh.
So.
Uh-huh. Hmm. You know, this is an interesting statistics at some of these high schools that are coming out now where there's lower usage by seniors than there is for freshmen.
I don't know about that here.
No, it may not be, but
like
part of what's happening is the freshmen want to experiment and find out about it. And a lot of the seniors have gone through that and said, no, now
well, I mean, because
I'm moving
then
on.
By the time you're a senior, you start planning out like, okay, this is what I need to do if I want to get here. I feel like... If you want to go into the army, then you have to stop smoking and you have to, like, realize you have to be on this, like, straight path.
Yeah.
So I think it's just the fact about your responsibility and whether you can or not.
Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to have to move on where the freshmen...
Yeah. Are just beginning.
Yeah. Interesting.
Thank you for coming and giving us this presentation and doing this interview, Ralph. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jordan. And thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, a lot of people learned a lot at the school. Some didn't, but a lot did.
great, thanks. Go ahead.
I think the community will learn a lot, too, after, especially after hearing this.
Yeah, I hope so.
Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's Youth Speaks Out. Our Environmental Prevention Strategies in the Community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you're interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email JAMA at jamashields@pacific.net.
Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many more hours of previous programs and streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX, but instead those of the people who express them. Youth Speaks Out is normally aired on the first Sunday of each month. Our next show will be in 4 weeks at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening.